right. Union of the Unwanted back August 7th, 2023. Charlie, take it away.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? Normally it's Ricky doing this, but he's got some, I don't know. He's got somewhere else to be. He'll be here at some point tonight, hopefully. So we're excited. We've got the Jones Plantation crew here for tonight. Their new movie just came out this weekend. We were nice enough to, we were fortunate enough to see it, get a sneak peek at Anarchapulco this year. And that's why I thought, you know what we should do is we should invite everybody to come on the show and let's talk about it, because it's more than a movie. It's a really deep examination of not just America, but your relationship with government, all disguised as being part of a period piece movie, which it is, but it also isn't as well. So we've got the writer Larkin Rose is here. We've got director Drew Treglia here. We've got executive producer Jeff Berwick here. Steve Poikonen, Slow Newsday, AM Wake Up joined us. And Sam will be here hopefully when he can. So let's jump into it, man. I'll tell you, I knew about the movie for a while, for a couple years because of Jeff. And I saw the 12-minute short on YouTube, God, I don't know, years ago. And I loved it. And for those that haven't seen that, there's an animated short movie that you can find on a variety of video platforms, YouTube being one of them, that is written and narrated by, but maybe not drawn by, Larkin Rose. And it's a fantastic way to take a look at the idea, the concept of slavery, and understand that it comes in a variety of forms and fashions, not just overt chains on your legs, but also invisible chains that reach into your pocket and take money out of it and steal your life and steal your soul and cause you to, I don't know, start an Anarchapulco or something like that. So it's the side effect of it. Yeah. So I'm excited that you guys are here. Larkin, can you tell us just like a little bit about like how the inspiration for the short, for just the beginning, the 12-minute short movie that you made, that was that some concept that you'd come up with and got together with an artist? Like, how did that even come about?
That was, I have a bunch of videos that were just sort of, what if I did a little thing like this, this allegory thing? And in that case, I wrote it. I was too lazy to even narrate it. Another person I know narrated it, a different person illustrated it. But they were both friends of mine, and they volunteered to do it. And I was like, here's a little project if you want to do it, just like some still shots for the illustrations and stuff. So a lot of my videos are like, it wasn't like I'm going to sit down and build some masterful thing. It was sort of, what if you throw together this thing? It probably took a whole half hour to write it. And then I sent it to the guy who recorded the audio of the narration, and I sent it to the person who did a series of stills. Then I just edited it together. And it's just, it makes such a convenient allegory, because if people are thinking in the context of a supposedly fictional story, they seem to be way more able to like think about things and consider things. And then to have that transfer over into them realizing that, oh, that also describes what we're in right now, yeah, can be somewhat traumatic. But most people, like, they have an easier time listening to a story, even if it's just a silly little animated thing. Because that was even just sort of a slideshow. It wasn't even like animated. But in that context, it was just one of, you know, a bunch of different ways that I was like, what if we represent it this way and explain it this way and try to get people to think about it this way? And I like what the animated thing turned into. And that was like 10 or 12 years ago. I forget. But it was his idea to make a whole stinking movie of it and really flesh it out and really give it substance and depth way beyond what the little, you know, short little allegory thing was.
But it wasn't the first time you had a short little story that became an allegory. But that was also the Tiny Dot which did really well. And again, it was one of those things where you watch it, it's animated, it's a couple minutes long, you watch it and you think it's about a tiny little dot and you go, oh, I get this. About halfway through, you go, I know what this is about. And so you've had this really interesting and unique way of talking about something by talking about something else, and people halfway through start to realize this isn't really what I thought of. It's about something. It's a bigger picture. It's about government. It's about overt, you know, this Jones Plantation. Oh, it's a slave movie. Kind of. I mean, there's a little bit of there. There's definitely a theme to it. But if the only thing you get out of that is a slave movie, boy, I feel like you missed the boat. You should probably get your money back or ask or go watch it again or something, because there's a whole lot more to this. And what was that conversation like with you and Drew when you guys came to some realization that, you know, it's actually be like a movie. We could turn Jones Plantation from 12 minutes of animated messaging into like an actual movie. I mean, that had to have sounded preposterous the first time you heard that.
Well, I loved it the first time I heard it, but didn't you start as saying
you would
maybe a short or something like a?
Yeah, originally I thought, because I did this project, I'm actually going to continue it, I think, called Democracy Down, just kind of interviewing people, sort of get the idea of what's next, you know, start getting people to thinking about what's could be next beyond what we're dealing with now in this ridiculous asinine system we're all living under. I interviewed him in Mexico at Jeff's conference in Acapulco. I think we talked about this, but it was the right before all the lockdown horse shit. I mean, it was just, yeah. I mean, literally like we got back. It was like 2 weeks later.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a miracle that we got to meet and talk about this. And in the interview, I said to him, you know, slavery was really bad because you're getting whipped and you're working a lot. And, you know, obviously it sucked. But I'm saying today the slavery is more pernicious because you don't realize it's happening. He said, oh, I did this little animated thing called Jones Plantation. It's in the interview. I was like, yeah, you should watch that. And I was like, oh, okay. And then I checked it out. And originally we were like, we should just make this into a narrative short. And then on the flight home, I think Doug actually said, we should make that into a feature film. And then once I got that in my head, I was like, all right. I started thinking about it, thinking about the opening scene and thinking. I said, okay, I'm going to stop thinking about this. I'm going to find out if he's interested. If he's interested, then I'll start thinking about it again because I don't want to waste any more energy.
Yeah.
You know, because I go crazy. I start thinking about things, walking around the house, just back and forth, thinking at the gym.
I contacted him right back.
And he wrote me right back. He's like, yeah, let's do it. So that was pretty cool. And he's been, you know, 100% supportive and trusting from the beginning. And like, he didn't ask for my resume or anything. You know, he just off top just trusted me, and we went into this together. Here we are. We finally.
But you've got to trust the guy you're going to do that
but
with.
He doesn't
right?
know me. You know, he didn't know me. And it's not like I had some great ledger of movies. I had two features I'd done. One was kind of a weird documentary I did for hire that had some money behind it, had a big screening and premiere and stuff, but had nothing to do with what we're doing now. And then I did it and had one narrative feature I'd done that I made for $13,000. It was a real personal film. So it wasn't like I had this great ledger of work that I could say, hey, look, you know, but he just, I don't know. Why did you trust me? I've always wondered that.
It just occurs to you now. Why the hell did you trust me? Well, it didn't take like talking to you very long to realize, first of all, you know, like whatever level you were at, you were way past me as far as making a movie. It's like, well, I know I can't. And I don't know what level you can yet, but I know it's better than I can do. And way more importantly, I know that you understand the message and what it has to be. Like if some Hollywood studio said, hey, can we buy your script? Like, no.
That actually happened.
And that how you tell that story.
Yeah, there was a couple guys that we worked with in the beginning that actually gave us one of the main actors in the film. They were friends with him. And great guys, but they're like, they love the script and they're like, listen, we can sell the script to, I'm not going to say who the company is. It's a pretty well-known indie company, very well-known. And they were like, we can sell this, but they won't let you direct it. And they need a director with a name on it. And they said they're going to make it about race, just so you understand. And I was like, yeah, fuck no.
You didn't even have to ask me to do it. I'd be like, nice freaking joke.
Yeah, but they wanted to buy it. They we'll put Drew Media on as a producer. You make a bunch of money, but you can't direct it. And it is going to be about race. So I was like, no thanks. We were nice about it. We're generous. Thank you. You know, thank you, but no.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. But I mean, regardless of whatever your resume is or isn't, if you're not ideologically aligned with the idea behind this movie, then get the fuck out. You know what I mean? There's no point to it. If it's like, well, we're going to make it, you know, we'll have one of the, which character can we make trans? You're like, I'm done. I'm out. It's funny you bring that up. So that's 2020. Cause I was there too at an Acapulco. We leave, we go, we all, everybody goes home. Then the world falls apart. Right. And so that's a 3-year window. How'd this happen, Jeff? When did you get involved? When did you decide that this, I mean, you and Larkin obviously know each other for a long, long time. And so when did you start sniffing around on this? Because when you and I were writing the book, you were like, hey, they're working on this. This is something that's going to be fantastic. And I remember thinking, when's it going to be out? Is it going to be, my dumb thought on this was that, oh, it'll be out in like a year, right? Well, maybe not. It takes a couple of years. So when did you jump in on this project, Jeff?
Well, I should say I didn't really jump in at all. I had barely anything to do with it. I listed as an executive producer or director or something, which I think just means you put quite a bit of money into it, which most of it wasn't, actually all of it wasn't my own money. It was
typical Hollywood.
Yeah, but I said I was going to donate, I think half or all, I can't remember, of our book. There we go.
Yeah.
And the book was pretty popular at the time. It was like 2 years ago or a year and a half ago, or it had just come out like 6 months earlier. So yeah, like a year and a half ago, I think. So it was still doing decent sales. It's not anymore, but they trickle in, but it's not like the beginning. I forget exactly. I really don't remember. Maybe Larkin or Andrew knows, but I think it was maybe $40,000, $50,000. And then we also promoted it quite a bit via our channels. And I think a lot of people who follow our stuff donated. So that's basically my involvement. I didn't freeze my ass off with them on the set or have to stress about anything, really. I just watched the original first cut. And actually, I just watched the release just 2 days ago. And I have to say, great job, guys. From the version I saw, which wasn't even color corrected, there was no soundtrack. It was just so well done. I'm so glad it got out. And, you know, that's what it takes too, right? Is a lot of people working together. A lot of people all at an Acapulco. A lot of people don't see a lot of the things that come out of an Acapulco necessarily, but when you have that many interesting, smart people at one event, they just start talking. And I had talked to Andrew before because he was a movie producer and he said he was an anarchist. So I had him on Anarchast. Then he came to an Acapulco. And of course, you were there too, Charlie. And then we ended up writing a book together. And that's, you know, actually, is that where we met? I don't even remember where we met. I don't want to.
We met on Anarchast when I was promoting my first book, and then that wound up happening. Then we just kept, you know, seeing each other in Mexico and part of Vallarta too. By the way,
can I mention how
I still don't remember Puerto Vallarta? I must.
I know. It was one night, and you know, we went out to dinner. It was we were drinking. I don't know. What can I say?
That sounds about right.
I just want to say, you guys, there was a point in the production where you guys put $5,000 in, and it was with Indiegogo. We didn't know this, so we did it for the first campaign. If you don't meet your goal, they stop accepting money in the campaign, so you're not allowed to take any more money. So we had to do a second campaign, a post-production campaign, and we lowered our number to make sure we met the goal so people could contribute after the campaign was done, which was huge for the project. We got lots of donations well after the campaign was closed. But we almost didn't make that goal. And then you guys came through at like the 23rd hour and dropped $5,000 on the post-production campaign and put us over, and it enabled us to keep the campaign going, which ended up allowing us to get a lot more contributions and money and get the project completed. So you guys are huge in this production, Jeff and Charlie.
Well,
yeah.
Happy to.
It was really important. You guys were really big contributors, and
yeah, and you know, you're asking about like, why would I put my faith in him, barely knowing him? Well, a ton of people in this, including you guys, like put your faith in us is like, well, we kind of know them. We know what they're trying to say. We know they're what they're, but like a ton of people donated to varying degrees, whether it's a little bit or a whole lot. They don't know what the hell it's going to be. It's just like, well, we know the little animated thing. Here's some money. Good luck. And the fact that there were that many people willing to throw in on something that, you know, a movie, it, the writer doesn't even know what it's going to be until it's done because a bunch of things change on the fly, much less people who are donating. So that was like, I'm really grateful for the number of people who had enough faith in us to go, okay, let's see what you can do.
So thankful, so grateful, so unbelievable. I can't, it's mind boggling. How many people just gave us money? I mean, just.
Yeah, and I'm really happy about the number of people who have said, whoa, that looked way better than I expected it to, like, given what you had to work with. And so, like, that's probably been the most common thing I've heard from people is, we didn't really expect it to all the way look like a real movie.
Where was it shot? Because it didn't look like Arizona.
No, it's shot in Natchez, Mississippi. And
I was going to guess Natchez. Man, I wanted to guess.
You would have won the jackpot. Well, there's no money left over, but
there's only a handful of places that look just like that. It's really rare, especially when you come across the water and there's a little inlet to land. Yeah.
Tell them about the place where you shot it, the actual place, because it's got a little bit of a history to it.
Well, you know what's hilarious about that place is that when slavery, quote unquote, ended, they gave that plantation to the black dude running the slave that ran it. Just so you know.
Wow.
Just a weird, interesting thing to think about because everything we're told is horseshit. So, you know, it's always good to have nuance to how they just gave it to the guy, the slave that was running it. They gave him the whole house. And this is funny because there's a letter in the plantation to the people that used to own it. Like, I need some money. I can't run this place by myself. I'm going bankrupt here. Like, I can't buy stuff. So that town used to be the richest per capita town in America. And when the Lincoln in the North went to the South and burned everything and raped all the women and took all their shit and killed them all, they took a left. They didn't take a right and they left Natchez alone. So all the houses in Natchez are still standing. None of them own their property that they used to own. But, so it's a plantation house tour place. And the house we shot in, we went back and did pickups in June and it literally shut down in July. They gave it back to us. They couldn't keep open. So we got so lucky getting in there the last time. Yeah. They shut the place down
right under the wire.
Yeah.
But you needed it to look like
worn out,
not dilapidated, but it needed to be in a sense of disrepair.
That's right.
Yeah, i.e. Right. The plot of the movie is right. I run this plantation. It's not the best run plantation in the world. I need a little bit of help. And then they bring in a consultant from McKinsey, I guess. I don't know. The equivalent of the 1860s McKinsey consultant comes in and is like, I have a very interesting way of handling my slave situation. Would you be interested in it? And that's we could talk about that because that doesn't really give away too much of the ending of the movie. It's the plot of the movie. There's a slave plantation that needs help with the slave problem. And they, in a very unique situation arises in which, well, Mr. Smith comes to town and has an idea for a very unconventional idea for how to run a slave plantation, and that is to remove the chains. Yes? Yes.
These methods have been used by the people for centuries. What is that line he says?
Men who've pulled the strings of the world for centuries.
Yeah.
This is the method they use.
This is the method they use, yes. This is the method they use.
That is, yeah. Isn't it?
And we had to make him black. And that's not a gift. I mean, because when we first started this, we were looking at the short, and I kept going, man, they're not going to let race go.
Yeah. People are going to think it's black versus white.
They're not going to let race go. And then he's like, what if Smith is black? And then we had like a big moment where we're like jumping up.
Make him a former slave.
Yeah.
Because that ruins the whole groupthink assumptions about it.
Those people don't care about the race or what race anybody is when you're in that crew. They don't care.
I'm still tripping on the fact that a fairly major independent studio was like, hey, look, if we could just take the script and remake it as Roots, that would be great. And we'll put the name of your company on it and it'll be cool, right? That's good.
Yeah, it's weird. Like, why? I don't know what. That's just a testament to his script writing, but I don't know what like they thought their angle was, because the angle is something different. So I don't know. I don't.
Why take a story and completely butcher? Or though, you know, Snow White, like they do that all the time now. Yeah. Let's take.
They
a story,
just made Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles about race. All right. So what do you think they're gonna do with anything? And people, no, it's dumb.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. So, but yeah, neither of us, you know, it was, there wasn't a millisecond where either of us was going to let anybody else have that kind of control.
I understand where they're coming from. It wasn't like I they need a household name. They got to put the, you know, package together to get the money. I get it, but
so and that's the challenge, is when you're in the game of filmmaking and you're up against this machine that has just insane amounts of money and influence and stuff. To try to say, you know, we're going to make it be the message that we want to say. And it's like, you know, for a lot of people, there would be the temptation of, yeah, but they could, if you'll just let us have a little bit of influence and input, then there's all this money and all this connections, all these actors. And one thing that I was pretty dang sure about Andrew and myself is neither of us were going to give an inch of control to anybody who wasn't all the way on board. So, and we never did. It was, we get to decide what's in the stinky movie. Also, ultimately he does, because he's the director. But it's to be up against that machine and trying to make something like actually independent and different and substantive and not just cookie cutter crap.
Like it was $1 million. I mean that literally. Like I wanted something that looked like the budget was 10 times what it was. That was kind of the goal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And if I, in the production. If I could just jump in here, like if I had to describe the movie to somebody, it's very heavy in content, in background, but as you watch the movie and you hear the soundtrack, there's elements of playfulness throughout it. There's like a it's not like all serious. I mean, there is. It's a heavy topic, especially the realization of, you know, the nature of freedom. Right. What does that really mean? But it's also done in a very playful way. It moves along at a good pace. Was that done consciously to, I mean, because you could have made it really horrific and very depressing in nature, but it kept it a little upbeat, if you want to use that word.
Yeah, it's funny, right? I think it's funny. I mean, I think it's so much. I think Jones is hilarious. I mean,
that character was awesome.
100% the idea was that I knew early on there's no way we could compete in the drama period piece space with the money we had. I knew we had to make a cult film and try, and I don't want to assume anything, but try to make a cult classic and make a one-off. The film had to be a one-off. It had to be its own thing where you watch the film, you love it, you hate it, whatever. You've never seen anything like it. That was the main idea of it. You've never seen anything like this film. And so there's never been a film like this that it insults the actual system that we live under. It's not just, you know, problems here, problems there. It literally insults the entire system that we all live under.
And points out the specifics of the reality of the game they play.
Yeah.
But I totally have to credit him for having it have the character that it has now, because I mostly did just picture it as a really dang dark period piece, which wouldn't nearly do as well. It wouldn't nearly have been as entertaining. It would have been like depressing and overwhelming. And when early on in like early versions of the script, because very quickly I was, you know, as soon as we had the idea, I was writing a script and it was quickly like 3 hours worth of script. And he's like, good, but now make it like an hour shorter. But early on he said, there are parts of this that are going to be really funny. And I was like, what are you talking? Have you read the script? And he was totally right. And it's, There are kinds of, you know, there's the cliche comedies where they're writing jokes and just like, yeah, no, it's not that, obviously. But there's kind of humor that has power, even though it's like nobody in there is trying, like none of the characters are trying to be funny, but just being able to make fun of the ridiculousness of the situation. I think there's huge power in that. To have, because it's still dark and it's still serious, but to make it so people can actually be entertained and even laugh at the ridiculousness of the games they play and the people who do this, like that gives it a completely different dimension that I didn't even picture when I was.
Yeah, the whole presidential debate and campaign, it's like so ridiculous, because I mean that's just kind of how it is now. And
we used actual campaign. I mean, there's dialogue is directly from Nixon's campaign from the 60s campaign. And literally the end of his campaign, he goes, vote like your whole world depends on it. Like, that's literally in his campaign. And then we used another one. The guy who ran against J.D. Vance, and I don't remember his name. Oh, God. He had this campaign ad. It was so ridiculous. He sold his own kids out, used his kids in the ad. I mean, it was just so bizarrely ridiculous. I just literally ripped his campaign ad, most of it from his. He had a son. It's like, Daddy, why does Grandpa love our neighbor so much? It was like that kind of shit. It was like, because he's a, you know, that's how it's supposed to be. Like, it was so bad. And, you know, and why did this factory close? And he goes, because people made some mistakes, son. Like, okay. So anyways, it's, I can't remember the name of that. I should probably bring up Tim. Oh, God, I can't remember his name.
It worked, though, because when you screened it at an Acapulco this year, you had the benefit of it being in front of a massive live audience. Like, you know, like the old days when you'd go to a movie theater and there'd actually be human beings there. You weren't just watching it at home.
We're screening in Dallas on the 26th, by the way, if anybody wants to come. We're going to be in Dallas at the Look Cinemas on the 26th. We'll be screening. We're actually doing a matinee. We're going to be there at 2:30 before, and then we screen at 3. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
It worked. Well, it was nice to have it in front of the audience, because then you could see if the jokes worked. And there was there were plenty of times where it was like the crowd got it. But of course, that crowd would get it.
Yeah,
you know, the Anarchapulco crowd would, you know, is they understand what the subtext is about. But yeah, it's a tough trick to take a serious topic like that, you know, is rightly not super funny, but point out little things. I thought what worked really well was dragging sort of the modern day things that we think of and putting them in that old timey scenario where they shouldn't be, things that they're saying what they shouldn't be saying, or acting the way they shouldn't be acting, mimicking people that we recognize in our current day. Those risks worked, though. Like, as a director, you've got to be pretty happy, because like that could go one way or it could go
that was key for me, because the opportunity to do the overeducated, like puffed up anarchist thing and be way too serious and just kind of like kill the joke as it's coming out exists within the framework of the movie. And you guys did things to let me know, as the person watching it, that definitely wasn't the case, that not only were you aware as the writer and the director, but the characters themselves seem to be aware of everything that's going on metaphorically as well as in reality. And that was enough for me to be like, oh, okay, well, cool. They have a sense of humor about themselves. Everybody involved wanted this to roll this way, and that was fantastic.
What we're living under is so ridiculous. I mean, you have to have a cosmic sense of humor or you're kind of screwed, because what we're living in is just so ridiculous. It's just, I, what else can you do but laugh at it, you know?
Yeah, but being able to make fun of it is actually psychologically a really powerful thing too, because the last thing any ruling class wants is for its intended victims to be literally laughing at it. Like, okay, if you're obedient, that's good. If you're just scared, we'll settle for that. But if you're literally laughing at the people in power and making fun of the stupid games they play, like that empire's on the brink of collapse. And it was in the script. There were a bunch of like terms and words that I looked up to make sure that, yeah, they really did say those things back then. So there's a lot of things that are a direct mimic of, you know, actual lines that I'm just doing my job and we're all in this together and trust the planet. Like there's a bunch of them stuck in there, but they all fit in context. Yeah, put on the damn mask. And by the way, there were slave masks and they had that purpose.
Charles, put on the damn mask. I had to fight for all those lines, by the way. Trust the plan. Trust the plan, sweetheart. Trust the plan.
Hoping that homeboy was going to say that we'll build the plantation back better.
Dude, that was in the script. He couldn't get it out.
I guarantee it was.
We're gonna build this plantation back and better than before. And he just took the line out.
Yeah,
and we had it in there.
But yeah, a lot of things changed.
We did
have
back the blue. We had trust the plan. Back the blue.
You could feel it coming. You could.
Yeah. one person, she said,
a new normal for us all.
New normal.
Yeah, it's genius. And what a find with Lee, getting Lee Gallman as Mr. Jones. Yeah. For those people that are on Twitter and you'll know him as Legal Man or the host of the Quash podcast, but he stepped up as the main character and just absolutely delivered. It was really fun to watch him in that role as Mr. Jones. I thought he played it just right.
He's funny, right? He's hilarious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's great.
That was the point. He's kind of funny, man. We went home I've never laughed so. I mean, that was a horrible experience, but I've never laughed so hard than me and Lee at night laughing about shit that went on that day during the shoot. I mean, we laughed. Just tears, just laughing. I haven't laughed like that since I was a kid, but he's funny, man. He's a funny dude. And I knew he knew the character. Well, we can kind of go back because we go back to the 3-year thing. It should have been 2 years. We had to go through all that COVID horse shit. And we had to like recast the whole film. And I didn't have a Mr. Jones, and I was a patron of his podcast, the Quash. And I started listening to his podcast and I don't know, it just hit my brain, hit my heart. It was like, that guy could play Mr. Jones because all those speeches he does where he's, you know, right when he's running for office and I apologize. That stuff. Yeah. That's him in court, you know, and he's smart and he delivers a line and he gets it. And I said, man, so I hit him up on his Patreon. I said, hey, I got a project you might be interested in. He didn't respond because he probably thought I was a Fed or something the way I wrote it. Then I wrote back. I was like, hey, I'm friends with Larkin Rose and we're doing this film, blah, blah, blah. And he said, yeah. And so then, long story short, I ended up in Dallas and we went and got breakfast and we just hung out for like 6 hours. And I was like, you're it. And you got to figure out something with your face because you're way too clean cut. He's like, don't worry, I got it. And then he did that whole thing with the beard. That was that. So, yeah, he made me look smart. He made me look smart for sure.
And let's not forget Larkin's great acting job as well. I thought that was really good.
I thought he did a good job in the opening, like drinking the booze. And
all I do is glare at people from the background. That was my entire
role. Monkey ass did a good job. I thought.
Are you eligible for reparations?
Good question, because technically I was an indentured servant.
It's funny because scene, he drank the booze. And I said, Larkin, that's like slave slop. You got to drink that like it's turpentine. And he's like, you did a good job. Yeah, wincing. Hey, take a job. He's not. He never drank. He doesn't drink.
So yeah. I had to wince at the water I was drinking. This is the tough stuff.
Yeah. Well, I think that people are going to. They're going to get two movies in one, right? They're going to get the overt, you know, in your the movie that they see. And then they're going to get some hidden, maybe more subliminal, deeper messaging from it, which is, you know, listen, man, whether you're stuck on a plantation, physically stuck on a plantation, having to work as a slave, or you're free to roam and live wherever you are, you're still really not free. You still owe people money. You still owe, there's the government that wants to shake you down. There's all these things. So it made this. It made the point that, like, we may look back and say that, you know, slavery was ended, but really it was just changed. It just went from overt physical, you know, obviously black and white slavery to something that's a little bit more murky, where we're all victims of it to some extent.
I mean, it was black and white in America, but the word slave comes from Slovak, which was the first recorded slaves during Rome. Those were as white as they come. So.
Right. Sadly, that's been most of human history.
And I you're being nice about it. I think we live on a goddamn plantation, hardcore. I don't think it's even murky at all. I think we live on a fucking plantation. These people, I'm born on a certain geographic region. They could just take 40% of my money. Got dudes running around in costumes, can pull me over and tell me what they want them to, they tell them to do to me. I mean, it's just absurd. This whole thing is completely absurd. And I don't know. The idea that you're free is absurd. You're not free. If somebody can take your money whenever they want, as much as they want, spend anything they want, and there's nothing you can do about it, you're not free. Sorry.
What do you mean there's nothing we can do? We can vote for Mr. Johnson next time.
There you go.
And that's what I hope. Like, I obviously, when people are sitting there watching the movie, I think a lot of people are going to notice, hey, that's like this. And hey, but I want them to then go out into the world and notice the other way around. Like, oh, this is Jones Plantation. Oh, this is Jones Plantation. And realize and recognize it when it's being done to them. Yeah. Like, recognize that, oh, this is just the Smith flavor of slavery instead of the Jones flavor of do what we want or we hurt you. It's now we'll play all these games about we're taking care of you and it's about equality and we're protecting you and, you know, all the BS. I hope people, like, even if they just, when they're watching the movie, just kind of enjoy it as an interesting story. Later, I want that stuff rattling around inside their head. And every political campaign they see, I want them thinking back to the movie and going, oh, man, this is it's the same stinking thing.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I'm hopeful that a lot of even normal people are going to get that to one degree or another, that they start to look around at real life and realize, wow, that movie was about real life. That wasn't really about, you know, some fictional place in some other time and place. And I think we made it obvious enough that, like, there's a lot of stuff in there to get, and I don't expect everybody to get it. Even people already on our side, like, if you watch it two or three times, you'll probably still be noticing stuff you didn't notice first couple of times. But I think even the people who don't usually think about this stuff, they're gonna notice like a bunch of it, because you can't not. I mean, you have to basically be in a coma to watch that whole thing and not notice any parallels.
Yeah. So,
well, I'm really excited to see how the normal people respond to it, both, you know, just liking it for the entertainment and all that, but how it makes them think about stuff and talk about stuff.
Well, it's a trick when you're able to do that, when you're able to get multiple messages across in one movie. I mean, it's undeniable that we're indentured servants to somebody, you know. I mean, you just have to kind of open your eyes and look around.
I gotta quit.
It's funny how many people refuse to acknowledge it, that they collectively we've just decided, oh, we'll pretend like we're not being controlled and therefore it'll be fine. Like, that's a pretty unhealthy way of dealing with it, right? Like, shouldn't we first seek to kind of get honest about our current situation, which is that we're being subjugated by a bunch of lunatic pedophiles in Washington, D.C. and elsewhere, and then kind of go from there? Sam's nodding. Sam's going yes.
Whose idea was it to put the hair smelling in the movie?
Was that probably yours. Yeah. That had to be yours.
There's, yeah. I mean, yeah. It's quick. It happens with the kid. There's a quick head sniff right there, and I was like, okay.
It's called the Biden sniff scene.
Yeah,
that was gonna be a really, really brutal, rough, terrible scene, and I was like, we can't let Jones do this because it'll ruin his character for everybody in the film, and we got to do something. So we said, well, let's do the Biden sniff scene. So we put the scene together, and I had the second unit. Actually, we didn't really have two units, but I had a couple guys with the camera that could shoot some scenes we'd have time to shoot. And they shot that scene, and I was so pissed off because if I had been there, his head would have been in her hair. But, you know, it worked okay.
You always find stuff to complain about your own work. Nobody else is noticing that.
That one really, man, people really, I mean, we screened it in Phoenix and brought the place down.
Yeah, same thing with New Hampshire. So we've had two screenings, yeah. And you weren't able to make the New Hampshire one, but people just completely lost it.
Yeah, the sniff happens. It's funny.
It's hysterical. And yeah. That's a fine example of we're making fun of these creepy psychos who think they have the right to rule the world. And if your subjects are laughing at you, kind of in trouble. And so it's cool to have a whole bunch of modern things in there that people are they can't not notice them. And one of the biggest things that I think makes this movie so different, this is my part of my intention, is I want people to watch it and then think about it and realize they're not sure they would have been on the right side. Like, they may have been falling for this crap. They would have been saying, no, we're free. We're not slaves anymore. And they're there to help us. And they're like, this is almost word for word out of the movie. I want people to watch that and go, God damn it. That's exactly what I say about this country, where I can't do anything without somebody's permission. And they steal from me every time I blink. And I want to see how many well-intentioned, like decent, hardworking people start to recognize, yeah, we're kind of in that crowd of people who are enabling this garbage and making excuses for it. And even getting mad at the people who tell us this isn't okay and this isn't freedom. And so it'll be interesting to see, again, what normal people dare to say about what rattles around inside their head after they've seen this thing. And then after they've seen it two or three times.
Yeah, I think it's really important that how it's done. For example, like the Jones Plantation short animation and the tiny dot and all that. The reason those things are so amazing and it's so great that Larkin made them is when you watch it and after you watch it, it all seems kind of obvious, especially things like the tiny dot. But what is really happening is almost everyone has been under mind control their entire lives and for generations, to the point that no one thinks they're under mind control anymore. And the actual word government, they don't even hide it. It actually means mind control, gouverneur. And so the reason I think this is so amazing of a movie is, first of all, when people watch a movie, they go into an alpha state, which means they're very susceptible to ideas. And they're going to be watching this and they're going to start to recognize things in their own life. But it's not done in a way to like shame them or anything or to attack them. Right. So they're going to have this like there's going to be some heads exploding watching this movie, I think. There'll be many it'll just go into their subconscious and it'll kind of stay there. And then the next time they see a campaign ad, it'll kind of go, wait a second, and they'll slowly start to break out of the mind control. And you can't do that using other means. Things like music and films especially are so powerful for that. And that's why they control Hollywood so much. And I'm sure if you gave it to those guys, they would have took out all the great symbolism and just made it kind of a stupid, you know, we tricked the slaves movie or something like that.
Smith would have been the hero.
Yeah, probably, right? So, yeah, like this is a huge potential opportunity. It's also, Andrew's brought it up quite a bit, that we hope this becomes like a cult classic sort of a thing. Unfortunately, with a cult classic, there's the word classic in it, which means it'll probably become a cult classic 20 years from now. But hopefully it won't take that long. But as people see this, this could actually create massive change. And that's why I want to really say to everyone on here, and thanks to you guys, Charlie and everyone, Sam, everybody, for having the guys on here. And everyone watching this who have your own show, start talking about this. We got to get it out there. Go to jonesplantationfilm.com. You can get the film, I think, right now. Start tagging it, hashtagging it. Get it out there. And if we can get enough buzz about it, it might catch on. And let's say millions of people end up seeing this and they're mostly all status, we will actually see within a couple of years actual changes in the real world, because they won't be falling for a lot of these things that are in the movie anymore. And you guys did a great job of putting in almost every important part. The money part was so important, right? Oh, we'll keep them indebted and they'll always be slaves, right? Like people would be watching that like, yeah, I got like tons of debt. It's like, yeah, they did it. They did it to you for the sake. Like there's going to be like click, click, click going on in people's brains. We've got to make sure people see it. So everyone, you know, do whatever you can to promote it as much as possible. And I don't, actually, that's a question for you guys, is like, what's sort of the next steps? Like, do you plan to try to get it on Netflix, or how do you foresee being able to try to get this in front of more eyeballs?
Well, we're doing like a step release. So what that means is kind of, first step is our target, is our core audience. Then we expand out next step. Then we expand out next step. So holidays, we're probably going to release it on major platforms like Amazon and everything. Right now, you can only get it at jonesplantationfilm.com. Does that answer your question? Is that a good answer? I don't know.
Yeah, that's part of it. To me, the two sides of it are sort of the normal practical way of pushing it and having screenings in theaters. Like there's going to be the one in Dallas on the 26th, and then we're doing in Atlanta, and we're doing in LA. Yeah. But for the normal people who want to help this out, the to me, the entire thing is about what makes it into the human discussion, like into the public discourse. Because if you have people with big audiences watching this and going, that was sort of cool, and talking about it and mentioning it, and they don't even have to be like, I agree with everything in this movie. They can just say this was thought-provoking and have it be the topic of discussion. Because the way that mind control works, government says, well, here are your two options, the extreme right and the extreme left, which are identical pretty much, and nothing in between makes any significant difference. There, you peasants are allowed to talk about that. And it's when the discussion wanders outside of it and people can start to say, maybe that whole thing is BS. Maybe that whole game is designed to. So now that we're in a world in which technology has made it so the mainstream isn't the mainstream anymore, like CNN and all those networks, their numbers get dwarfed by people like Joe Rogan and Russell Brand and a whole bunch of people who most of them are still statists. But if they watch it and go, whoa, that was cool and thought provoking. What do you think of this? And it becomes part of the discussion. Yeah. That's 99% of the job, is just to have people starting to talk about and think about ideas that you're never in a million years going to get from what used to be the mainstream media and Hollywood.
It's a film for the times. It's a film for the times. I was trying to say, basically, honestly, having it on our own website now, we're just trying to protect our project and trying to earn enough so we can make another film. We already have something lined up that we want to do. So if we just put it out into these giant global platforms, we'll make no money and it'll just get washed away. So that's why we have it there now. There was something else that you mentioned I wanted to bring up. I forgot.
Jones Plantation 2, Electric Boogaloo. Is that what I'm hearing?
I would love to see that, because I would love to see the consultant. I'd love to see a consultant Smith consult on Big Pharma and the Forever Wars. Like, he'd just be like a consultant throughout the ages.
He's here. Jones Plantation 3, Revenge of the Smith.
In 3D.
We could do this. We could do this for a while, fellas.
I know.
We could.
Smith Rocky Lord. 4, bring in the Russian. Oh, Smith. No.
Right?
There was something you were talking about. I mean, some of the clips would work very well on TikTok if you could do it in sequence.
I agree with you. We got to get with our guys from the marketing guys. I keep telling them that. They created Jones Plantation accounts on these websites. I think they should be personal accounts that have Jones Plantation content. Nobody wants to follow a company account. That's my opinion.
Yeah.
I got to fight my battles, man. I got to pick my battles. There's so many to fight. It's like
infinite battles.
I mean, I've punched enough holes in the walls of this apartment. I got to slow down, pick my battles. Yeah.
Your battles against drywall are not that useful.
Yeah.
One thing I hope to see is people who really get into this movie and want to spread it. I would love to see it if, like, every, you know how the political parties and police departments and, you know, they all have their own, like, web pages and like Facebook pages and all that. I look forward to the day when you start to see a bunch of comments referencing the Jones Plantation. It's like some politician gives a speech about how we need to provide free blah blah blah, and somebody's saying, oh yeah, I remember the speech from Mr. Johnson on the Jones Plantation.
Jones Plantation.
And just have people going, what? Wait, what are you talking about? Because like people who've seen it are already going to be making a whole bunch of those connections. But to be pointing out, like, this is what we're talking about. This is what we showed you they do. And here they are doing it. And having people go, what? And then they go watch the movie and they go, holy crap. Yeah, it is.
I like this film to start riots.
All right.
Full-blown riots. There's a film from the 60s, an Italian film called Fists in Pocket. And the guy made the film and then he took it to some festivals and showed the screeners. And he hadn't had the sound done yet. And they watched it and they said, listen, you need to take this film and throw it in the garbage and never show anybody this film ever again. It's going to destroy your career. And he got this pretty much unanimously. And he went, I can't remember the director's name. He went and he finished the film and put it out, and it literally caused riots in Italy. It just became part of the on the tip of the tongue of the culture. And it caused riots, like a whole summer of rioting in the city. Like to see real riots, like people
Yeah.
wash and pull them out and just start hanging them. or just like cutting their heads off. That would be amazing, wouldn't it?
There we go.
Just tar and feather would be nice.
Peaceful things. Not that they don't.
I'm not peaceful.
Let's get on TikTok first. Riot after that. Humanity.
What's that?
Get on TikTok first and then worry about the riots.
Have you considered giving away PlayStations?
I was just going to say that. Have a giveaway in right downtown New York City and tell everyone to show up. Yeah.
Everybody watches it gets a head. They get a congressman's head. If you watch it, you get a free head.
You go down to Alabama and you do screenings on party boats.
Yeah, Joe's PlayStation.
Oh boy!
Good job of keeping this moderate.
Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah. Well, you thought HBO was going to be all over Narcopoco before? Wait till after this airs. Holy shit! Hey, what's the plan for coming year, Jeff? Too early.
A little too early. Although I've got a ton of ideas. I actually almost decided not to do it a month ago. We got all the counting back and I was like, man, I think I lost like way more than I thought I did. I think it ended up being well over $200,000 this year. And I think, you know, looking back, we took a chance because we ran all the way through the COVIDs. And you know, 2021 was like, you guys all came to 2020, which was hilarious. We had our coronavirus, medical station with the women with like the surgeon's mask giving out coronas and everyone's laughing. And I was like, oh, you're laughing now. This is going to be our lives for a while. We had a whole bunch of people on there talking about how they're going to force vaccines and stuff like that. Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, Del Bigtree. Yeah. And a lot of people are like, why you got vaccine people here? I'm like, you'll see. Like, I know how this goes. Like we wrote all about it. It's all in our book. Controlled demolition, this is what they do. They've been doing it for a long time, as the Jones Plantation really shows. Like, this is like a long, old trick they've been doing for a long time. In 2021, I think we didn't even know if we could even run it. But we found a secret garden. It's called Secret Garden. It's a botanical garden, with people who are very like-minded to us. And we're like, listen, the princess wants us all to wear masks, sit 6 feet apart. I was like, this is not going to work for a bunch of anarchists who know what's going on. We did it there and they said, don't make it too big because, you know, like even like the Mexican government barely did anything and we could have probably handled it, but they didn't want like, you know, a big event right in the heart of the COVID's panic of the whole pandemic. So anyway, we had like 100 people that year. And then we tried the next year, we had like 300 or 400. So this year we were like, well, I think a lot of people would be excited to come because like they've been locked up, like people from Australia, Canada, they couldn't even leave unless they took a lethal injection with poison. All the stuff we've been talking about, all the stuff that's, you know, in our book that we've been talking about, but that we put out right after the COVIDs, by the way. But this year, I thought a ton of people would want to come, but I didn't realize that there was still quite a few travel sort of like doubts and restrictions, even back in February of this year. So a lot of people weren't sure if they wanted to come. Then the crypto market's been horrible. So a lot of people didn't have a lot of money. So anyway, we ended up losing quite a bit last year. And I was thinking, man, I'm, you know, everyone's like, oh, Jeff, he charges too much and all he cares about is money. It's like, I lose so much money on this event. And I'm like, fuck you guys. I'm just not going to do it anymore. But then I was like, man, this last year was actually the best year by far. You guys were there. Larkin was there. Charlie. It was amazing, actually.
It was greatness.
It was awesome.
Yeah. And I was like, well, we got to give this one more chance. So anyway, that's the long story of it. And I decided like a couple weeks ago, okay, let's do it at least one last time. And if, you know, we lose tons of money, I think I'm just gonna have to pull the plug on it. But, you know, I think we'll do fairly well. It depends on the crypto market. Depends if they launch another plandemic, which they're on route to doing right now. Or if the financial collapse that's going to probably happen in the meantime. It's so fun running events. So many people warned me, don't run events. It's not easy. It's like, yeah, it's not easy at all. But anyway, yeah, we're going to run it. It's February 11th to 16th. I hope Larkin, I hope Andrew's coming down. Charlie, I'm sure you're coming down. But if you're not, you're invited. You're all invited to speak, of course. We're just in the planning process for it right now. But should be, it's our 10th year.
I can't recommend, I talk about it all the time. because I just come back feeling so inspired. You know what I mean? Like you're around people that are doing stuff. They're just doing interesting things. And you're like, oh my God, this guy from Australia who I'd never in a million years meet is running this unusual health clinic that's doing things totally different. And you're like, you know, you just, you sort of need to give yourself the opportunity or the permission to be extroverted during that week at an Acapulco and talk to everybody. And if you do that, you'll meet a whole network of really fascinating people all over the planet that have a lot of similar traits. They want to be left alone, and they're finding ways to work with one another, and they hate the government, and you just leave feeling pretty inspired, but also kind of bummed out too, because you're like, you know, I got to go home and it's not going to be like this. So it's that, you know, you get your batteries recharged.
I get to stay there
for the next year, you know, just by going and meeting all these people and I can't even tell you how many people I've either had on my show or I've stayed in contact with that I met at an Acapulco. It's just been it's just a good listen. But listen, it's fucking February in Mexico. Holy shit. Like, that is enough for people to want to be there. But then you add in all the networking and all the interesting topics that are going on. It's like you'll know what's going to happen in the future by like a year and a half. It's wild, man. The fact that you guys were doing the Corona stuff a couple of weeks before it was really kind of a thing was hilarious to me.
Yeah, we saw that coming.
People in Acapulco are amazing too. I mean, it's really cool. And not to cut you off, Jeff, but just real quick, if you live on the west side of America, basically, the easiest thing to do is fly out of Tijuana. It's so easy. You go to San Diego, you take a Uber to the border. They have this cross-border thing. You just literally park at the border and just go through Tijuana customs and fly out of Tijuana. It's cheaper. It's super easy. Just
nice.
Yeah.
All right. So everyone in Southern California, you've got no excuses.
Yeah. Or just, I'm in Arizona. I mean, I just drive to San Diego and park. And it's a direct flight. It's awesome.
Yeah.
They just started doing this recently, like last couple of years. It's amazing.
Steve, AM wake up road, on the road for a week. Mexico.
I would love it. And San Diego's about a 10-hour drive from me, but San Francisco airport's about two and a half hours away. Sacramento airport's about the same.
I'm just saying, it was a lot of fun this last year that they had the live remotes going from it.
You want to hold in an alternative location in Acapulco, I live a town away from the Bohemian Grove, uphill and upriver. We could do a whole thing, and I've got the acreage for it.
But you've got a better name.
Well, it would be the Bohemian Grove, right? Wouldn't it?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Are we gonna sacrifice kids to Moloch? Is this, are we gonna change in our
decidedly no sacrificing kids to Moloch on my property? However, there's a spot about 12 miles down the road where I'm told that happens at least annually.
Yeah.
The unthinkable.
Hey, we're anarchists, do whatever you want. Sacrifice the kids.
Yeah. I don't know. I think if you're somebody that's you know,
wield real power, you must be willing to do what most consider unthinkable.
You're going to need to leave you're going to need to get up off your couch, leave your country, get on an airplane
permanently,
and go hang out for a week with some interesting people talking about crazy shit. You know, I've always, you know, appreciated hanging out and getting to know the people from that event, because, you know, Jesus Christ, where else are you going to find that collection of weirdos? You know what I mean? Like 3 o'clock in the morning at the bar at the Princess, Jeff, having a conversation with Ole Damegard about Operation Gladio. Like, where in the world could that ever happen? I was having an out of body experience, like him, Richard Gage, and we're all talking about 9/11. I'm like, what the fuck is happening here? You know? So I encourage people to get up and go do something, you know, get up there and go to Mexico next year.
Hey, I swear to God, that hotel, the one we stayed at in 2020, was it 2020?
Princess Mundo, yeah.
I swear to God, because Jeff talked about this on that show. I watched the show on HBO. I went through a fucking portal in my hotel room, and I swear to God that happened to me. It was some crazy ass. I went through some crazy portal in one spot in my hotel room into Mayan, sort of a Mayan dancing. I know I sound like a crazy person, but I swear to God it happened. I kept going.
You know, Howard Hughes.
I was in the room with Doug, and I go, Doug, you hear that? He's like, no, you don't hear that drumming. I go, no. And I would go back, and I would close my eyes, and I would end up in this portal. And I went outside because they were always partying at night because Mexicans have fun. And there was nothing going on. There was nobody there. It was totally quiet in the hotel. Go back to my bed, lay down, close my eyes, and end up in this portal. It was crazy, man.
He may be losing his marbles, but
no, I swear to God.
Did you know Howard Hughes died in that hotel?
Really?
Is that true? Yes. Yeah, he locked himself up there for like months. He was scared of germs.
That went well.
But Andrew, did you just come back from an ayahuasca ceremony or anything when that happened?
No.
Well,
I did buy.
I was downstairs in one.
Yeah, like CBD, it was going on.
It was heavy CBD with slight marijuana, weed from, what is his name? It's a guy's name, Anarchist Tom or something. Poco Jim or something. What is his name?
Or was it the year that Nathan Freeman gave everyone ecstasy, but it turned out to be meth? Was it that year?
Oh, that's fun.
I don't think so. I don't think he was there.
I think that was earlier.
No, I don't think it was that. I don't think meth would have taken me there. I would have gone to hell. It wasn't evil.
Lots of stuff can happen in Acapulco, that's for sure. And there is like a ton of energy there for sure.
Yeah, there's a weird energy in that. That hotel has got an energy to it. And
well, it's built like a pyramid, and it's even got that eye in the middle of it, which is kind of like not really up our thing. But like, I asked a few people like who know these sort of things. I'm like, okay, so there's a lot of portals here. They're like, yeah, this is like one of the craziest places in the world for portals.
It was a
portal. I'm like, is it like all evil portals? And they're like, no, like it can be used as it's energy that can be used for good or bad, but it's crazy energy in Acapulco.
I didn't know if it was good or bad, but it was a portal, and I don't know. I felt like it was a portal. I was in another time watching something go on. Does that make any sense? It was like dancing and music.
According to my friends that dabble in the sacred geometry a lot, Acapulco is one of those particular places where if you overlay sacred geometry imagery on top of either globe or flat earth, Acapulco lines up as a particularly interesting spot.
Yeah, I could believe
maybe that's why you washed up on the shores, Jeff.
Well, that's a whole story. Yeah, like I just went there on my boat once on my way to travel the world, and I sank my boat in El Salvador after that. But I stayed in Acapulco for like 3 months, and I was going to stay for like 2 nights because the whole thing to me was like I knew nothing about Acapulco except for when I was a kid in the 1970s on The Price is Right, all the housewives would go crazy when they want a trip to Acapulco. So I was like, oh, it's going to be some like cheesy tourist town. So I show up, I get off the boat, I go, how do I get to the bar? And the guy goes, just go out and get on a bus. And all these buses are whizzing by, they're all private buses, you know, anarcho-capitalist type me. And I said to my friend, I go, how do we stop? And he goes, I think he said, put your hand up. I put my hand up and two buses rush for us. One cuts the other one off. We get on, it's playing disco music. Girls are dancing. Someone hands me a beer. We get off, we go into a club. And I see like this guy fall from the sky. I look behind me. There's a bungee jump in the disco. And then the next day I'm walking down the street. I'm all hungover. I'm like, what is this place? And I see the newspaper, and I understood enough Spanish to understand it. And it said, yesterday they chopped the heads off of 8 cops and rolled them down the street. And I was like, I think I love this place. I think I found my home.
That sounds amazing. I wish you could have been there. But
everybody's sales pitch is a little bit different. You know,
or a lot different depending on.
Yeah, you know, everyone's like, "Don't go to Mexico; it's dangerous." I'm like, "Well, it's dangerous for the cops and the politicians. It's like, it's awesome for me. Like, that's my kind of place." And then I met my wife, and then that's the whole story. And I just stayed there.
Yeah,
but you know, we went out and had like I had street tacos with Dan Dix and Patrick Smith. You know, just there on the streets in Acapulco, I never felt like I was in any danger.
Nah.
Yeah. wandering back from Max Egan's bar.
Oh, no, like when morning. I go to the U.S., any major U.S. city, it feels 100 times more dangerous than Acapulco. The thing with Acapulco is that they had some cartel kind of guys fighting out over the territory after the government, of course, came in and arrested the top guy. When the top guy was running stuff, his name was the Barbie. Because he had blonde hair. He was born in the U.S., but he was half Mexican or something. When they arrested him, everyone fought over it, and everyone still uses those crime stats from that year. And they were all like killing each other. So like, oh, this is the murder capital of the world. But like, they were just killing each other. Camera. I just got a new camera. But they're just killing each other. Like, I remember I was in a Starbucks and everyone started running into the Starbucks. And I was like, what the heck? So I ran out to see what's going on. And someone had shot a taxi driver in the head. And the taxi guys are usually involved with the cartels. But while everyone is rushing into the Starbucks, I was in there working, writing my Dollar Vigilante blog. I ran out to see what was going on. So anyway, it's not really like that at all anymore. And really, if you're not involved in the drug trade, there's really, it's basically like heaven on earth. And of course, there was the one guy who did get killed there. That's what the whole HBO documentary is about. Yeah. But he was fairly involved in the drug trade, and he was living in the worst ghetto in Acapulco, and he was causing lots of problems. Well, I can let Lily talk all about that. But in general, like, most of Mexico in general, I feel way safer than most places in the U.S. Now, I'm not talking about going to like those really nice parts of Arizona where like there's cowboy towns and all that. Those places are awesome. But like, go to
right now
city, forget about it.
We're actually here right now.
Well, when Amanda and I were there, I forget which year it was, but one year we stayed for like a couple days before the event was happening. We were in this kind of the poor part of Acapulco. In the middle of the night, we just went out strolling and felt perfectly safe, and people were there and waving. You know, we don't speak the stinking language. I felt safer there than I do now where we live in our apartment in Phoenix, because neighborhood isn't that great. Like, he's a half hour away in a way better place, which is probably where we should be.
I live in Cowtown, but I'm with you, man. Mexico, it's
the 7-Eleven we walk to gets like stuck up every other week.
You're in Sketchtown.
I know, this is way worse. Phoenix, like, parts of Phoenix.
Acapulco, if you want to get in trouble, you can. But otherwise, if you don't, you're fine. It's totally cool.
I think Americans are starting to assess their options. You know what I mean? Like, I've always been an American. I've always lived in America. Do I have to continue doing that? Because if they have eyeballs, they're watching the world disintegrate around them. They're watching the dollar become hyperinflated. Their rights get stripped from them. And they're going, you know, at the rate we're going, there's going to be blue helmets in here. And then where do I go? Is Mexico an option? You know, so people are starting to think about things like that. And from the times that I've been through Mexico, which has been quite a bit for a variety of reasons, I mean, be careful building that wall, man. It might keep us in.
Yeah. Well, you know, the thing about the states is you get the police state, but you don't get the police. It's dangerous and you're in a police state. It's like the double whammy. It's like, if I'm going to be a police state, at least I want to be, what's that place in the Middle East? It's like super safe, but it's a police state.
Dubai. Singapore.
Yeah, but here it's a police state, but it's freaking dangerous. And, you know, depending where you're living, good luck defending yourself. You know, you're not even allowed to do that anymore. That's the thing about Acapulco. It's like, I feel like if anybody was messing with me, I could just take a baseball bat to them and go, hey, the guy was trying to rob me. Fuck him. And they'd be like, okay, no problem.
You just handle everything on your own in Mexico in general, in Acapulco. Like, no one ever would call the cops for anything ever. Like, it's just, right.
Yeah.
And that's where people get confused about the crime stats too. Like, they'll be like, I heard there was a lot of murders. It's like, yeah, the cartel guys were cleaning up the town from all the robbers and rapists. Right. And they just go out and chop their heads off. There's no court costs. There's no waiting 2 years. There's no corruption. It just gets handled. It's in many ways, Mexico is like almost like a, like one of the best anarcho-capitalist type places on earth for that reason. Yeah. I've said for years that the wall is to keep the Americans in.
Yeah.
And I actually hope that a ton of Americans don't start moving down here. And I actually kind of hope they do finish ruin that wall for that reason. Yeah. But one little thing that not many people know is
since the COVIDs, one of the only countries on earth that didn't do anything, like nothing, was Mexico. They didn't ask anything. They didn't have any regulations, no rules. In fact, the Mexican president and the health minister said it's a big pharma scam. And because of that, for the last 3 years, people have been moving here from all over the world, and it's actually been booming. Like, the economy is absolutely booming, and you won't hear that anywhere. You don't hear it on the news. You don't hear anyone saying it, but I've actually seen it. So it's turning into a really interesting place, and much freer in general than most places in the U.S. Of course, if you live in a cow town and you know the sheriff, you might be living pretty free, although the IRS is still watching you. You're still being tracked. Sorry, I just got a new camera. It keeps turning off. I got it pretty much just for this and for another interview I have to do. But anyway, yeah, so those are my comments on Mexico.
Yeah, listen, it's going to be an option for a lot of people here pretty soon. Let's wrap this thing up. I'm really glad you guys were able to come out and hang out for a while and just explain, talk a bit about the movie, because when I was watching it, I knew I wanted to put this show together if it was possible to have you guys come on and talk about it. Cause I'm always curious to know sort of the backstory about it and, some of the funny things that and Drew is my guest on Macroaggressions this week. So if you can go, you guys can go catch that full episode, and Drew and I get into some of what was really going on behind the scenes. It's a fun, important movie, I think, for people to watch. But if you can get them watching it, if you just get them to watch it, I think that it's one that will stick in your head. You'll start to think about it a little, a couple days afterwards. You're like, oh man, it's hard to get rid of it because it exposes you to some realities, which is, maybe not as free as we think we are. So, Jeff, where can people find you? What's the best place for them to catch Dollar Vigilante? What are you guys doing? You have a big announcement, yeah?
We do.
You do?
We have a big announcement?
No, does Dollar Vigilante have an announcement?
I don't think so.
Okay. All right, no big announcement.
Well, your email says it does.
Oh, that. It's just something called the Vigilante Insiders Club. But yeah, anyway, if you don't know about us, just go to dollarvigilante.com. And if you don't know about our walk and talks that I do with my dog, Lucy, definitely check it out.
Great, it's videos, a lot of fun. Great videos. Follow that. Yeah. God, sorry.
Yeah, so you can get that at vigilante.tv. And I've got pretty much everyone that's on here on vigilante.tv, including this show that we're on right now. Yeah. Larkin's on there. Charlie's Macroaggressions on there. I'm on there with Lucy. It's called The Land of the Band. And it's basically, and Max Egan, so all the people who are banned, all the people who come to Narcopoco, those kind of people, they're all on vigilante.tv.
Yep. Macroaggressions goes out on vigilante.tv as well. Yep. I'm happy to be there. Larkin, what are you working on? What's new? Where can people find you?
More things than I can count. Mostly the place most of my stuff is flying out of these days is actually just my YouTube channel. I've been making a ton of them recently, which is just youtube.com/LarkinRose. But there are always way more projects in the works than I have any hope of ever actually finishing. Some of them may be with this psycho over here, and some of them without. And it's when we get something like Jones Plantation finished and it's like, there, we made a stinking movie, and I'm really dang proud with how it came out. Then it's, we're going to do the promotion that we can do and whatever we can think of and trying to get on shows like this and stuff. But there, we have an army of people who are already on board and on the same side as us. And if each one just sort of mentions it here and there and drops a comment here and there, that is massively powerful. The concept of something going viral now, like, that wasn't a thing 40 years ago. There wasn't the technology for that. Now a bunch of normal people can all talk about a thing and get it in front of millions and millions and millions of people. So it's done. It's out there. It's time to release the beast of the Jones Plantation onto the world. Jonesplantationfilm.com.
$10
Place to see it. It's $10 to see the thing.
We got you guys early. I'm grateful for you guys to come on so soon. It was just released. So, Drew, what about you? Where can people find you?
Just go to JonesPlantationFilm.com and buy the film for $10.
There you go. That's pretty simple. Steve.
I have a YouTube channel at Drew Media TV if anybody's interested.
Cool. JonesPlantationFilm.com.
My 10-year-old just broke 5,000 subscribers to her YouTube channel. She's a
the world we live in.
What kind of content are you doing?
Gaming? Well, she tries everything. She A-B tests, and she just did this cat video, and it got like 500,000 views.
There you go. Stick with cats.
She's amazing.
Cats playing video games. People love it.
Jones Plantation brings you cat videos.
And she was a star in the movie, too.
Yeah, she's in the movie. She's in the carriage.
She's in the carriage scene.
That's how I bought her.
Oh, nice.
Girl, she's like, "Daddy, you almost there yet?" And he ignores her. That was our little toss to I guess I should get on camera.
Yeah.
That was our little toss to pedophilia.
Nice.
Slight little hint little that people can get or not.
Steve, AM Wake Up.
Yeah.
The best morning show in the interverse.
It's true. And amwakeupshow.com. I'll rock then, Rumble, and then basically anywhere you can catch a podcast afterwards. And as always, I appreciate being on the best ensemble podcast in the multiverse. You guys rock.
I appreciate you.
We'd love to have you guys on to talk about the film too.
You guys, make that happen. AM Wake Up. It's a really fun. It's the morning show that you should really be watching.
I gotta check it out. So is it only on Rockfin, or where do we find it?
No, Rockfin, Rumble, the Spotify audio afterwards, and podcatchers, stuff like that. But it really is best consumed live. It's designed to be a live show, and I've huge fan of like the Opie and Anthony radio days to have comics come in with just in the moment insane shit along with actual narrative deconstruction of what's happening here as seen through the lens of someone who does not participate in the, two-party bullshit.
Okay.
That's my man, Steve Poikkanen, right there, man. It's the real fucking deal. Sam Tripoli dropped off, but he is running tinfoil hat. Everybody knows about that. And he's got broken simulation, and I guess he just got shouted out on Rogan. Is that true?
Yeah, that's what I heard.
Cool.
By nice. Brian Callen. That's nice of Brian Callen.
He's best friends with Brian, so yeah.
Yeah, he's got him on Conspiracy Social Club.
Yeah, he does his own podcast with Brian. Yeah,
Where he tries to convert him. Yeah, tries to wake him up to it.
It never works.
It's a great idea.
We need to get Joe Rogan to shout out Jones Plantation Film. That's what we need.
Yeah.
For fuck's sake. I mean, it's easy to do.
How do we get him?
No, but really, honestly,
guys,
I get the feeling he'd probably like it.
It would be better. It would be easier for you guys to get a shout out on InfoWars by Alex Jones.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. I'm going to see him this weekend.
You're going to see Alex?
I'm going to see him this weekend. I'm going to meet him this weekend.
Oh, you got to tell him to watch the film.
I'm going to the American Liberty Awards in Austin, Texas.
I guarantee Alex would do something like that.
Congratulations.
And Alex is going to be there. I'll manage. And then we're going swimming at the lake with him.
With Alex?
Nice.
Fun day.
Oh, man.
Right. Ask him if he wants to come speak at an Acapulco for me.
Okay. I'll ask him. I've never met him, but apparently
take him a Reuben sandwich.
Scott Armstrong is hooked it up.
He likes Reuben sandwiches and jalapenos. Take him that.
I know this. Yeah. I know this. Believe me, I know this. That's Midnight Mike from OBDM, the funniest show in the world. What's going on with OBDM these days?
Oh, you know.
Joe's back.
We're go live on Wednesday nights at 7 p.m. And then again, Saturdays at noon. You can check us out on Rumble. We have clips up on YouTube and on every podcast platform. It's all there. It's all happy. I probably have. You can tell Alex Jones this. I have the largest archive of Alex Jones clips in human history.
I know this. I can attest to it. Yeah. It's the greatest. OBDM is the greatest podcast in the world. I host three podcasts myself. I can honestly say that it's my favorite show. I never miss it. Anyway, Macroaggressions goes out twice a week, once as a monologue, once as a video interview. This week, you can catch my interview with Drew, the director. We talked about all kinds of cool stuff. And that's it. If you want to follow me on Twitter at Macroaggressions, on Instagram at Macroaggressions Podcast. Thanks for driving, Mike.
Thanks, everyone.
Laz, the free home of the brave state police nationwide. Pull you over, put your wife on the hood, put a glove on, and just start ramming.
Ricky Verandas, Ripple Effect Podcast. Can't forget him.
Yeah. Don't forget Ricky. He's in the show notes.